Welcome to Fresh Meat, a freewheeling podcast from Manifest Group, where we bring together some of the best creative minds around the freshest topics in the industry. Expect a healthy dose of insight, innovation, and inspiration. And if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe. And if you're feeling a bit cheeky, why not give us a rating too? Today, we're marking B Corp month with a conversation about running a positive impact business, whether they're better equipped or worse off in the current economic climate, and generally just lifting the lid on marketing a B Corp enterprise. With us today, we have Emily Laws, head of brand at my personal favourite non-alcoholic beer brand, Lucky Saint. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, good to hear it.
And we also have with us Ian Hambleton, co-founder at Ecology.com, a carbon offset and reforestation subscription brand launched in 2019, as well as having many fingers in many innovative pies, from virtual reality gaming with Mayor's Theory to decentralized energy and Web3 with our soon-to-be-launched blockchain project. How are you doing, Ian?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me along.
And last but not least, we have Sinead Gray, joint managing director at PR agency Kindred.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Okay, so as a bit of background to today's conversation, Manifest is a freshly minted B Corp. So we've obviously just gone through all of that process. And when we saw B Corp month coming up, we wanted to have that conversation just around how important, I guess, not just the B Corp structure is, but running a business in a certain way that has that positive impact on audiences. So my first question, I guess, is pretty simple. Like, what was the main inspiration for each of you for pursuing B Corp status with each of your enterprises? So Emily, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So it kind of came from our MD, Emma. She was really keen for us to become a B Corp. Her background, she was at Innocent Smoothies and they were a B Corp. And obviously they communicate a lot about being a force for good. And I think as an alcohol-free beer brand, we already are doing a good thing. We talk a lot about inspiring the world to drink better and kind of providing a really great drinking experience for people who are cutting down or not drinking. So naturally we're a brand with purpose and it felt kind of the right thing to do to then pursue B Corp status. Also, I suppose we're at a good size where we can do it. Anyone that we speak to about B Corp, we always say that, you know, it doesn't get easier as you get bigger. So it felt like the right time. And our ops director, Liz, was kind of project managing it. We also used a couple of agencies and freelancers. I think one of them was called Greenheart. So we've had lots of help along the way and it's been a really amazing journey and our consumers have reacted really well to it. I was just saying that I had a few calls with consumers this morning. We're doing a bit of feedback and both of the people I spoke to kind of picked out being sustainable and being a B Corp as something that was really important to them. So it's not just something that we love talking about internally. It's really kind of getting through to our customers as well.
Okay, great. And Ian, tell us a bit about Ecology and the kind of the B Corp status there.
Yeah. So Ecology is the one where we have our B Corp status. All of us founders were super keen on it early on as a sort of purpose over profit company. It sort of fitted our values of how we were running the company and how we wanted to. And for all of those reasons, it felt like a perfect mix for us. It was a long process, like over a year, but we had some help. But internal, our COO, Joel, did a great job getting it through. And it took a long time. And I think because it takes a long time, it is really trusted and viewed. Mm. So it's become sort of a kite mark for businesses doing for good. Yeah, super pleased. We got, like last year, I think we got Best for Planet and we scored super high. So I think everyone loved that. So it was great.
Cool. And Sinead, Kindred, there's not that many comms agencies that are B Corp certified.
Not yet. And I hope that there would be more. I think there should be more. It was quite a natural next step for us because positive change has been our focus for a long time. It's baked into a lot of what we do. So it felt like a really natural thing. And I'd say the process for us was quite straightforward. We did it all with the team internally, but it did also take a long time. So we got certification in July. And we also work with a lot of B Corp brands and businesses, so people like Abel & Cole and Lily's Kitchen and UK holiday company Love at Parks. So we wanted to, we recognised that we shared those values, so we wanted to make it official. And the other thing that I really welcome about it is you recertify every 3 years, so it gives you like so much of what I do is looking at, you know, what's launching next week, our numbers for the quarter, our like targets for the year, and actually to have something with a 3-year time frame that you're always working on, I think it just keeps you focused on doing all the things that you should be doing because you have to show improvement across those 3 years. So you can't just be like, oh crap, we renew again in a month. What are we doing? Mm. So yeah, I'm really enjoying the fact that it's baked into everything I do across the longer term as well.
Yeah, I think part of the process for us as well that was really interesting was kind of ratifying or making official things that we did that B Corp kind of, I don't know, gave us a reason to be proud of it, I guess, to some extent. There's a lot of transparency the business has at Manifest that I think we knew it was the right thing to do instinctively, but we didn't necessarily have a governance structure that told us that we had to. So there's a lot of question marks around that kind of work, those workflows around, do we need to do this? Do we need to prioritize it? I think B Corp gave us that structure to feel good about prioritizing things that weren't necessarily obvious to everyone in the business as to why we're doing it. But it's interesting because we've got three very different kind of businesses here, right? We've got kind of a digital services business, we've got a consumer product business, and a, you know, a services, B2B services business. And it's, I think, a struggle sometimes for B Corp to translate what it's doing because it is across so many different industries. But what for each of you was probably the hardest thing to adopt or adapt? And was there anything you had to change whilst going through the process?
I think for us, I mean, being a consumer product, I guess there's lots of different kind of categories where we had to review everything that we're doing. So from our suppliers to our packaging to the way that our business runs and treats its employees, I think there were certain areas that we were really strong. And again, that was, like you were just saying, a really nice reason for us to celebrate that. So the fact that we're 50% of our workforce is female, and that's actually quite rare in beer as well. The fact that we have lots of great benefits, employee benefits. So I think lots of people, certainly I, when I heard about B Corp, I just assumed it was to do with environmental, kind of doing good things for the planet. And actually the people side of it is so great. And especially as a small business and as a startup, it's really important to kind of celebrate the way that you treat your staff. So I think in that area, we already were doing lots of great things, and it just meant that we kind of made those things a bit more official. I think from the kind of operational side, I know that our ops team worked really, really hard. We sent out a survey to all of our suppliers, and kind of, I think that was really good for them as well, because it's this knock-on effect that B Corp has. So it's not just that we're looking at what we do, we're asking our suppliers to look at what they do. And just small things like our packaging and understanding, like I say, speaking to consumers and realizing they aren't as fussed about our packaging being, you know, totally beautiful and gorgeous. They're more bothered about it being more environmentally friendly. So kind of looking at the whole business, every consumer touch point, everything behind the scenes was a really challenging but rewarding process. And I think, like you were saying, it's now baked into everything that we do. So it just means that everyone in the business is thinking in those terms. So even small things, you know, we're, we've recently launched a pub, the Lucky Saint in Marylebone, and even just small things like what, how much paper we print, like the team are just thinking in terms of being a B Corp. Do we really need to go out and fly a, maybe not, we can do it digitally. It's just small things. And I think that then every 3 years, hopefully it will get easier because the whole team are behaving like a B Corp now that we've gone through this whole process.
Cool.
I guess,
what was the challenge for you?
Well, I guess I was going to agree with both of you. At Ecology, because we're a climate action brand, from day one, trust, transparency have always been like a massive thing for us. If we ever lose those, the business is dead. And so we did a lot of things early on. We have this radical transparency thing that I was really nervous about, if I'm honest, when we discussed it. We put all our finances on the website. We put all our board minutes on the website. We put everything that we've ever bought on there. 0.1% of our customers or community look at that, but they tell everyone that we do it. And so the B Corp thing for us was another stage of that journey. So I wouldn't be able to pull out anything particularly that was like, oh, we were really struggling on this. But what I think I'd agree with is it gives you a framework for realizing where you're not quite where you need to be. So you probably through going through the process realize that maybe you're a bit of a 7 out of 10 on something that you've not really thought about. But in other areas, you're like, oh, great, we're doing that already. So I think that's really really important in the process. You sort of, it's giving you that ability to step up in areas that you may have forgotten were so important. And I think, as you say, Alex, it gives people a reason at the end. Everyone loves a badge, as Ecology knows. you know, it gives you something at the end to make that rewarding to people perhaps who are a bit more skeptical. So I think all of that together just makes it so valuable for a business.
There's a credibility aspect for a new brand like Ecology as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, full disclosure, obviously, like, Manifest is also a co-founder of Ecology.com. Yeah. But I think there's definitely a challenge when you're launching a new kind of product into a market that is, you know, digital.
Yeah, and in climate where everyone's mega skeptical and, you know, greenwashing, etc. So, yeah, it's a badge of credibility alongside our Trustpilot reviews and everything else that is super important.
I think that's one of the reasons why I was quite relieved it was a really difficult process. Mm. Because what I didn't want to do was go through a process that was just dead easy and it was just ticking boxes that then meant, okay, well, anyone can do this and it's just a kind of bandwagon. But having said that, with the proliferation of B Corp, and not just B Corp, but other kind of purpose-driven accreditation and that kind of positive impact messaging and a lot of greenwashing, I guess, as well from big businesses, like, is there an increased cynicism towards B Corp or a bigger question mark around that credibility?
There was a recent piece, I think it was in the FT, that came out. We got contacted saying, you know, we want to interview Lucky Saint for the FT. And we were like, great. So we arranged this phone call with our founder and MD. And it turned out to be this kind of semi-interrogation about B Corp. And the piece came out and it was a little bit cynical, I think, about B Corp. But actually, our MD and founder were super proud to have kind of stood up for B Corp, I suppose, in that article. Our MD then kind of posted it on LinkedIn and said, you know, we're really proud of our B Corp status. So I think it's important as well for people to know how difficult that certification is and how much effort and detail goes into it, because I think you don't want it to become what planting trees has become, which I think after a while, sort of, you know, for every thing you buy, we plant a tree, is just sort of become a bit meaningless. People have become a bit suspicious about it. So I think that things like B Corp Month are really important, because then hopefully people listening to this podcast will realize how difficult it is. We're kind of speaking to a lot of our fellow B Corps about how we can kind of, I think their theme of B Corp Month is we go beyond, and how do you get that message out there? I think there's just, everyone's cynical about everything all the time. Yeah. So I think one of the things that we were really keen to do from a marketing perspective was not talk about it as if it was kind of, you know, not to use it as a marketing ploy, but actually just to have it as a sign off on everything that we do. So it's not that we're a B Corp and we're just kind of going around showing it off in order to sell more beer. It's actually just a sign off. It's something that hopefully does become something that every brand has, and it's just expected, rather than it's this kind of thing that we can just use to talk about in our marketing.
And I think we have to get comfortable with that level of interrogation, you know, in articles like that one in the FT, because there has been, like, the language of sustainability has, like, purposely sometimes become, like, overly complex and difficult to understand. And I think we, as B Corp companies, we should, exactly the attitude that Lucky Saint took, be comfortable with having that debate and talking about it, because, you know, by talking about it more and more, we will raise awareness, because I think awareness levels are fairly good. It's good to see customers are spontaneously mentioning it to you. But I think we all want it to be higher.
Yeah. I think as well, you don't want to scare businesses off that trying to do better is still a good thing. You know, you shouldn't feel like you have to get to a certain point before you can talk about the good changes that you're making. And we talked about our journey to become a B Corp. Myself and Liz, our ops director, did a talk at the Chartered Institute of Marketing about, we weren't a B Corp at the time. We were really open about it. And we were talking about the things that we were doing to get there. And I think also it's really important, not just in B Corp month, for B Corps to be talking about it, but also brands that are on that journey to become a B Corp. Because I think it's a shame if people feel like they can't say something until they're absolutely perfect, because no one's perfect. There's always improvements. Like, we're hoping to get more points next time we certify. But so I think there's a balance of, like, yes, you want it to be difficult and be a real certification that's respected, but also you don't want to scare people off that they can just always be doing better.
I think that's interesting, isn't it? How cynicism might become a barrier to actual improvement rather than an assessment of it. And I think ecology.com is obviously so close to all of that, right? Because to some extent, it's often the first foot on the ladder for businesses looking at a sustainability policy or a strategy, I guess, for improving their impact on the planet. It's kind of, okay, well, firstly, trying to offset what our current impact is before they then embark on a carbon reduction program. But have you seen an increasing kind of cynicism around just that? The offset market is obviously incredibly difficult from a communication standpoint, because everyone's like, well, that means you don't need to improve if you're offsetting. Mm. And to some extent, it's kind of a nucleus of a lot of this discussion, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because I go from being frustrated by the skepticism to thinking it's amazing. Mm. So it's like, it's hard to be held to account. But if you're held to account, then you are constantly evaluating what you're doing. I would agree, though, that like everyone needs to improve a bit. And if you go too far down the skeptical greenwashing angle, all you do is convince people not to do anything. Mm. So we talk to loads of big businesses, big corporates who are doing stuff, who don't want to say they're doing stuff. Yeah. Because they're like, we've dangerous. Got this packaging that we've just launched that's really great, but we don't want to talk about it, because if we talk about it, they'll identify one of the other products we have that aren't. So I don't know where I sit on the whole greenwashing thing, because you've got to just temper the skepticism with some real positive reinforcement, because you don't change things if you basically scare people.
Or so, if you just do it yourself. So if you're not communicating it, you can't inspire anyone else in your category to do the same. And I think that's often a challenge, isn't it? It's kind of, if you communicate it, does it look like you're only doing it for the commercial or the brand gain that that's going to deliver? Or is it a case of needing to communicate it to get everyone else to see that it's possible and feasible in your category?
I think it's really interesting just how difficult it can be. I don't know about yourselves, but most of the businesses we deal with, they are really trying to do good. They're not just doing it to greenwash. They are doing it to try and do some good, but they are worried about, you know, how that's perceived. There might be sector specific. Look at fashion. Fashion is a nightmare within climate. But if you speak to most people in fashion, they're desperate to try and do something.
Well,
but
after the energy sector, fashion's the biggest polluter. After oil and gas, which is crazy when you think about it.
But, you know, when you dig into the problems with them, them changing supply chains in the way they need to is really bloody hard. And so
I think it's really good to acknowledge how hard it is, because actually the big problems in the world that we need to solve are really difficult. And, you know, we should have honest conversation about that, because otherwise you get scared of, you know, trying.
I'd agree with that in life in general, just a bit of humility and a bit of being honest about where you're at and trying to communicate that with your community along the way.
I think it's really interesting, because we have studios now in 5 different time zones, and it's so funny how, you know, the difference, I guess, in the approach around not just purpose marketing or sustainability, but kind of this general positive impact strategy for business, how different it is and what point of maturity it is in Scandinavia versus in the US, for instance. So the US, I would say, are far less cynical in general, I think, about brand activity. I think there's, you know, a kind of pride in capitalism in America that doesn't necessarily exist elsewhere. But in Sweden, the word sustainability is a four-letter word. You know, to be sustainable is a base level. You know, if you're just hoping for net zero, for instance, then definitely don't communicate it in Sweden. You know, it's kind of, what's the positive impact you're going to make? And actually looking at other structures, we work with a brand in Sweden called Houdini, which is a kind of, I guess, from a product standpoint, much like Patagonia or North Face, it's outerwear for mountaineering and other outdoor pursuits. But I mean, they take this kind of consideration around supply chain, for instance, to the next level. And they ran something called a planetary boundaries assessment, which is kind of a detailed, really detailed insight into their impact on the planet and everything. So they actually know what's put on the grass that the sheep eat, that then produce the wool for their outer layer garments. And they're frustrated that they can't find the exact, like, ingredients plant for some of the feed for, you know, some of those. And it's just
amazing.
Kind of, It's incredible. And like, yeah, their outer layer, their shell layer, for instance, is had to be registered as a foodstuff, I think, in America, because it was so organic. It was, it could be edible. So it's kind of, but all you get from them is frustration that they can't improve further, that they can't do more. But I think you also have, interestingly, in Scandinavia, the lack of cynicism is matched also with the presence of hope. So there's such an optimism that you can find solutions. And just the name Houdini, it's a mountaineering term to escape an impossible situation, but it also refers to climate change. And just this idea that everything they're doing is potentially going to get us out of this mess is actually a very different narrative to what you find in the UK, which is just this inevitable, I don't know if it's a British mindset, but it's like, it's just a black hole, isn't it? The future. We're all going to die on a burning planet, and we're just going to have to, you know, if China doesn't sort it out, it's always someone else has sort it out. And the UK, I think, is a very cynical culture business-wise around it.
I think the thing that doesn't help that sometimes is when I was listening to a podcast with Mark Ritson, the Marketing Week columnist, and he was sort of talking about how it's okay to not to be a brand that wants to make a great product to solve a consumer problem. So for us, for example, we wanted to create a great tasting alcohol-free beer. We weren't created to help the planet necessarily. We want to make sure that we're minimizing any kind of wrong we do to the planet, and B Corp status is a really important part of that. But the reality is that people buy us because we are a great tasting alcohol-free beer. We've done lots of kind of message testing with this, and like, they love that we're sustainable as a kind of supporting message, but that's not the number the one reason they buy us. And I think brands need to be a little bit careful that they're not being too worthy and sort of pretending that their number one reason for being is to be sustainable, because that's not the reality. You know, lots of brands are solving consumer problems that aren't to do with sustainability. You know, people wanting to find a great tasting alcohol-free beer is not a question of sustainability. For us, it's a supporting thing that's the right thing to do. I think that cynicism sometimes comes when people are overstating it. And that's part of why for us, it, like I say, it's a sign off. It's, you know, and we're a B Corp. We're proud to be a B Corp. Rather than saying, you know, we're under no illusion that the number one reason people buy us is because we're a B Corp. If we tasted terrible and we were a B Corp, people wouldn't buy us. So I think that's partly where brands have to be careful. And I think it does damage when people overstate it, because you're like, is that the reason you exist as a brand? Or are you trying to sell that product that you think is really great? Whereas there are brands like Patagonia where it is baked into everything they do. It sounds like it's with your agency, it's the same. But not everyone has to have that as their number one thing. It can also be something that's just the right thing to do.
Definitely. And talking from a marketing standpoint, Sinead, I think something that's interesting for me is how the purpose economy and the concept of purpose has kind of been almost deliberately misunderstood to just be bolting on some altruism to what you do and then pretending it was always there or that it was always some kind of inspiration. But I've always took purpose to just mean an authentic kind of reason you get out of bed in the morning, right? So that might, you know, what you do might obviously still be producing a non-alcoholic beer, but there's a reason why you decided to pursue that. Either it be a passion for beer or a passion for solving problems or, there's kind of an authentic purpose, but it doesn't need to be altruistic. You know, when I talk about positive impact, that could be putting one smile on one person's face they wouldn't have had otherwise. You know, if it's a product that saves time, that might just mean a bit more time that they get to spend with their kids, or they get to stay in bed for 5 minutes, hit snooze once more. You know, like that's a positive impact on someone's life. It doesn't have to be creating a carbon neutral fashion industry, which is a big challenge. And I think that misunderstanding is potentially caused a lot of issues. You know, that's why, for instance, Mark Ritson is saying, you know, don't be embarrassed to talk about your product, you know, as a representation of your brand. But how have you found it, Sinead, in terms of your clients, I guess, and the brands that are coming to you? Are they more or less open to that purpose messaging at the moment? And that kind of will lean into also our next topic, which is the current economic climate. Are they less interested now there's probably a bigger kind of economic knot to untie?
So we talk about positive change, you know, making measurable improvement for people's lives, for communities, and all the way up for the world. So it is that spectrum of things, in the same way that you're saying, Alex. I think we're definitely seeing a bit of a mixed bag with our clients at the moment. I think everyone is facing so much more budget scrutiny at the moment, and it feels like at the end of last year, the beginning of this year, everyone's always like holding their breath to be like, what is going to happen? Whereas in the past month, I feel like there's more things flying around. So when it comes to, I guess you're asking, like, have clients kind of rowed back on purpose things because of budget constraints?
And also nerves, I guess, like Ian was saying, you know, they're nervous about communicating it now because of this cynicism that kind of exists.
I think they're just, we're getting a lot more like approaches, direct approaches, and people wanting to ask a lot more questions and feel a lot more confident with the rigor that's going into campaigns if they're going to talk about these things, which I think is a really good thing. But we're saying to people, you know, you don't have to be perfect. It's okay to be on a journey and just communicate that with transparency. I think there have been things where, you know, things have been put on hold to find out what's happening with budgets, because there is a reality for businesses that costs have massively increased, especially, you know, in a business like yours, you know, I feel like the cost of everything has gone up, and then that has implications. But I think overall, we're still seeing people, you know, wanting to communicate the value of their product, which is both being an excellent product and also the other things that they do to be more sustainable, you know, because people are being, you know, not everyone is just trading down. People are just being like a lot more fussy about why they're spending their money. So I think one of the trends we'll see from this recession is people wanting to, you know, have little luxuries and things like that, but also knowing that they're buying into brands that's also doing something good for the planet. So you're getting like a feel-good factor from that too.
Yeah, and I think that social impact is probably a bigger aspect to communications at the moment. So, you know, protecting and defending communities and people and supporting everything from representation through to, you know, economic support for those worst hit by the situation, you know, that kind of positive impact might also, I think, see a bit more of the spotlight rather than the kind of the bigger macro narratives around climate, the climate crisis, for instance.
I think post-pandemic, we are much more aware of our local communities because we relied on them a lot more. And we're also aware that things don't impact everyone equally. And I think that's a really good mindset to be taking into this next period of time, which may be rocky.
I got to know my neighbours for the first time. I've been there for 5 years. And then we were all sort of hanging out in the little grass area at a social distance and actually got to know them. So I totally agree. It's completely changed.
Yeah, there's so much that's changed culturally, I think, around marketing. Yeah, and just communities because of it. And I think we'll see a big analysis of that in the next kind of year or so, where people go, okay, what were the permanent changes that COVID brought about that had nothing to do with the virus? I think that's going to be really interesting. Just moving on from that point around, you know, how brands are behaving in the current climate, in the spirit of radical transparency that you find really a struggle with ecology, are you finding more reduced or the same interest from businesses, given that, I don't know, budgets might be looking at being more tightly squeezed on nice to haves such as offsets and reforestation programs and the likes?
So it's a good question. I was thinking about the subject. I think definitely, to your point, in the last year, brands have had to look at things much more tightly. And whether they're saying it publicly or not, climate, in our case, which is really our purpose for being, is being slightly deprioritized. It will come back, but it is because, you know, if you're a B2C consumer, you want to feed your kids first, right? It's totally understandable. If you're a business, you need to pay your employees first. So there is a macro effect. But, you know, the reason about 4 or 5 years ago, I got to a point in my career where I went, I only want to work on things that I'm passionate about. They happen to all be in climate because I'm super motivated by that, because my kids' kids aren't going to live if I don't. So that was my turning point. And I think the macro conditions really, for me, it's like I just believe purpose-driven businesses will win more all the time. So in like when the conditions are great, they do amazingly well. When the conditions are not great, they do better than other businesses that aren't purpose-driven. And that's to do with people in the talent in the business, the people who are motivated to do the best work. It's like a sort of a makeup values thing that just means you connect better with your community. It just wins, right? So I didn't know that at the time when I made that choice, but that's what I've learned. So I would say that to some degree, it's affected consumer behavior, you know, and businesses' behavior, but it also means we've got to innovate and do more and you know, we've got a ton of projects coming on stream, which are all like amazing in different ways, from carbon removals to like seagrass and rewilding. And we're doing a ton of stuff. So out of challenging times comes innovation, and that's great, right? So, and the best survive. So
definitely, I think that's sometimes an overlooked aspect, right, of investment in, whether you call it a purpose, whether you call it a sustainability strategy, or, you know, even like diversity, equality and inclusion fits within this, right? Everything within that B Corp framework, I guess. The bit that people forget is that the performance doesn't come from just people buying it, right? Because it's got a B Corp badge on it. It comes from the fact that people show up to work, committed to work in that environment. They stay in the jobs longer. You know, that passion, especially working in a creative industry, I think passion is the key driver for success, right? If everyone's focused on doing great work, and work is something that we produce, not where we go to produce it. And I think, you know, especially when you are in a business where everyone's got that collective central purpose, people understand, okay, well, everything that we do, even the boring shit, everyone's got boring shit they have to do, right? There's no job that doesn't exist without the boring, you know, stuff.
But I'm doing it for a reason.
Yeah.
So it's like, suddenly, it's okay.
Suddenly it's like, okay, at least
I
can...
I don't know what you mean. Anyone here is not a founder or an MD. So just in case mine are listening, I have no idea what you mean. Love every bit.
But that's it. I think like even admin feels like it's part of, you know, it's a block. It's a chapter of a bigger story. And I think that's the bit people forget about. Why, you know, I often get asked, why are you doing that? Isn't that costing you money? And I think there is an aspect of, you know, it's not a principle unless it's cost you money. You know, there is that kind of badge wearing, okay, well, we invest in this. But it's also proof that, you know, it's an investment that is going to pay off. You know, it is better business at the end of the day because we have, you know, employees that stick around. We have clients that stick around. We produce better work because of, you know, all of it is because we build brands that change the world. That's our central purpose. And it is a wanky phrase you put on the website, but it is also the structure to our strategic process. What's the change we're going to deliver? Like you said, Sinead, I believe that personally that brands and businesses are going to have a much bigger impact on communities and cultures being able to tackle these big challenges, such as the climate crisis, much more than politics or institutions. Because they can move quicker, but also people are interested. You know, can Nike influence a bigger cultural moment than a politician? I would say yeah.
Yeah.
I'd also say that consumers are in this tricky spot where they do not trust politics and they don't trust politicians to solve it in lots of ways, not just climate, but they don't feel that they themselves can do something about it. I mean, ecology just scratches that itch, which is like, I need to do something, but I don't know where to start. And then we give them lots of different things that they can do. And I think if you're a consumer of Lucky Saint, you love the fact that, okay, I'm enjoying this alcohol-free beer, but I'm also supporting a brand that is trying to push the envelope and do stuff. And I think that that's why it works for businesses. I agree. Mm-hmm. I think businesses will check and financially incentivizing change is a really clever way of solving the biggest problems.
It's also worth investing in from a brand point of view, even if you do look at it with that cynical lens. For me, in my role as head of brand, like brand to me is just reputation, and you're going to get a better reputation if you're going to invest in having a product that is better for the planet. And so it makes sense from a marketing and brand point of view. And I think the temptation during COVID, and, you know, I joined the business the day before lockdown, and it was this really crazy first week where we all, you know, all of our on-trade accounts just shut, and we were like, oh God, what are we going to do? And there could have been a real temptation there to just put money into performance marketing, but actually investing in that longer term brand building, part of which is what do people think of our brand from a sustainability point of view, was well worth it. And it has massively paid off. So I think though the temptation might be to say, I can't fund that, that's a nice to have, I think that's a mistake, because longer term, you know, it will become standard that people are sustainable, and then it's not a point of difference anymore, but it is if you don't have it. So I think that's something to bear in mind, like, what's your reputation as a brand, and is that worth investing in? Like, yes, absolutely.
And that's a change I've seen recently, is businesses understanding that in order to affect change, you can't just exist as a thorn in the side of the status quo, you have to replace it. And I think Lucky Saint is a really good example in, you know, there's nothing I think inherently wrong with alcohol, for instance, but there's lots of people who would avoid cutting down alcohol or struggle to do that because there isn't viable alternatives that feel as good, that taste as good, that have the brand experience. And I think I've worked in the beer world for a long time as well. And I think it was such a toothless kind of, oh, you know, kind of goody two shoes side hustle for brewers to produce like a non-alcoholic beer, and it was just 0%, and it was given some terrible sub-branded name.
Yeah.
And I think what I like about Lucky Saint obviously is that it's got that kind of halo above it, but it's there with a wink, you know, and it's there as a real beer brand to compete with beer brands as well as other non-alcoholic beer brands. And I think it's the same that Tesla did with cars, whatever you think of Elon Musk. Like, they effectively said an electric car is a better experience than a petrol car. They needed to do that to get people to mass adopt electric cars. It wasn't a Nissan Leaf. You know, that's not going to, as much as that was a really important vehicle, and I'm not dissing Nissan, and it still is, it was always an alternative to a petrol car. It wasn't the replacement of it.
You have to make those choices feel good for the consumer, you know. Yeah. If something is a worse product and a worse experience, but it's sustainable, you're never going to help people make that change. But I'm going to go back to the office now and tell our founder, Luke, that we compared him to Elon Musk. He'll love that.
You should.
But yeah, I think having that good feeling when you're choosing brands, it's not just that, oh, great, they're sustainable. You still got to drink it, eat it, wear it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just on that point, you know, you mentioned Patagonia earlier. And weirdly now they're just like this amazing sustainable brand, but they are ultimately an amazing set of fashion products, right? And people would stop buying them if they weren't so good. And so, you know, but it's weird that now we think of that brand almost purely because of the sustainability angle, but actually they make amazing clobber.
But we have that expectation of quality from them, don't we? And we'd be disappointed if
I think it's perhaps more challenging at the lower end of the market, actually.
Yeah.
Like you were mentioning Houdini, pretty easy for them as a majorly expensive product.
Yeah.
Selling to some people that really can afford that.
That's less,
but even it'll be like top ends.
Yeah, totally.
Scandinavians. And like, so what do you do to try and help someone much lower down? And everyone needs to move forward a bit, don't they?
And I think ecology is a really good example too, because everyone can just offset in a blind way. But the truth of the matter is that ecology is fun, right? When we first started ecology, I signed up as a family. And my daughter still asks to see our forest growing. She still asks what projects we're supporting, and you can see it. And it's a conversation as a family. There's a value there. But I think fun as a business strategy to incentivize change, you know, at the end of the day, we all need that positive, immediate positive impact to see reward in what we're doing. And that's a good example, I think, where business can solve a problem that actually pious political structures and institutions can't. I think it's almost like Apple, right? Apple never invented a technology in their lives. They just invented a desire for you to use it. You know, tablets existed for a long time before iPad launched. And I remember the strap line when iPad launched was, you already know how to use it. You know, they understood the problem that the audience had was actually, this is a computer for people who don't like using computers. It was kind of like the first step forward. And like that human aspect that businesses understand, you know, how to affect human change. Yes, it might be measured in some extent through transactions, but if each transaction is having a positive impact on a life, then you can be proud of that. It's not a vanity metric anymore. It's something that actually is delivering value. And yeah. I think that's where there's real hope, hopefully.
And fun is going to get so much more important over the next couple of years. You know, if, you know, the cost of living continues and, you know, we find ourselves in more of an economic downturn, like people need fun.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be something extra. I mean, you know, you're right. The forest, the digital profiles, they're like, we didn't know this at the time, actually. It was a very lucky accident. But like, they are your place on the internet where you can showcase what you're doing for climate. And there's gamification and it's enjoyable. And if you think about climate and what we were saying about China, like, it's such an intangible problem to solve, right? We do a very hard thing. We ask people to give us money and get nothing back, right? So they're funding climate solutions around the world, and how can we give them? And so we're trying to make that feel more tangible through gamification and all that stuff. So I think you do have to bring a bit more in this next wave.
So just to wind up the conversation now, I think, what's the next big step on the journey for you guys individually as businesses and brands? So what's the, you know, we've got the B Corp status, we've got the journey that we're all on. Is there a landmark milestone, or is it just a case of keeping on and keeping on with the kind of the structure that B Corp gives you to continually improve? Is there a landmark, or is there a milestone? And Ian, I'm going to ask you about your special project as well.
An immediate thing, we're moving to a new office space. So we'd never really thought about our impact, because we don't make a product. We'd not really thought about our impact, but actually doing B Corp, moving office, making us think about that. I'm desperate to find a UK B Corp stationery brand. So that's like an immediate thing. And then like a broader thing, we're talking about like positive change is serious business and the commercial impact of being a purpose-led business. And that's going to be something that we have a lot more focus on with our clients, because that's going to be incredibly important over the next couple of years. And yeah, the, you know, certification for us is now 2.5 years off, but we are thinking about now, how do we really improve our score? Because I think that's really important to show our team that we have committed to something for the long term and we are making those big improvements.
Similar for us, actually, we just moved to a new office. So we've opened a pub called The Lucky Saint, as I said, in Marylebone. It's a proper historical pub building. It's alcohol-free and alcoholic, which is always a surprise to people. They're like, what do you mean? Is it not just an alcohol-free pub? But our founder, Luke, has always said, you know, he doesn't think people should have to go somewhere else if they're not drinking. And when we got our B Corp status, we didn't have the pub. So that's another element now that we really have to think about.
Mm.
How do you run a B Corp pub? I actually don't know how many B Corp pubs there are out there. Maybe
is it open now? Can we go?
It's open now. We're actually, yeah, open officially from tomorrow. We're out of soft launch. So you're all very welcome. Wow. And we have a podcast studio there. So
oh, really? We'll record the next Fresh Meat there. Sorry, Spirit Land.
Yeah. but I think that for us will be the next sort of challenge, is how do we certify not just as a beer brand, but as a hospitality and a pub brand. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
Fantastic. And Ian, on ecology's journey, what's the next step?
Yeah, we're growing. There's loads coming, new projects, new innovations. One of our biggest ones is the Ecology Zero product, which is like carbon footprinting and helping people achieve net zero and beyond. So yeah, I mean, really exciting times there. And then I guess Ethos, which, you know, we're doing together again, bringing the band back together. So my background is I'm sort of a little bit schizophrenic and on projects, and I'm very much involved in climate, but I'm also involved in a game studio that does loads of blockchain and Web3, which gets a bad rep, but actually is like fundamentally an amazing technology. And so we're taking on energy as our next one. Mm-hmm. So we're decentralizing energy through like blockchain-based Ethos assets, which allow you to invest in climate tech around the world in a super liquid way. So it's like bringing together amazing tech, probably helping people to like financially incentivize change in a less altruistic way, which I think is slightly needed to shift the dial. It's a much better model than crowdfunding, but it's also not like relying on big corporate energy providers to change things. So yeah, it's pretty cool, pretty early on, but yeah, it's super exciting at the moment.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody. That's been a really interesting discussion. I hope everyone who's listening agrees, but also thank you, Spirit Land, for the epic recording studio. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please do subscribe. And if you'd like to be a guest on Fresh Meat, then drop us an email at freshmeat@manifest.group. We'll chat about all kinds of different topics. As Julian says, who's a much better presenter than I am, so I apologize. It's a freewheeling podcast. So hopefully you enjoyed wherever we wheeled to today. And we'll catch you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.